welcome to the show. We just were on your podcast, and then I was like, hey, like, I'd love to chat with you on my podcast. And you were, I was like, great, like, book something. And you, like, booked for, like, 4 days later. And I was like, well, I kind of need a break from her for a second. I was like, it's just like, well, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. It was a quick turnaround.
First, like, I feel person like, to say that ever.
No, I just feel like we just chatted, and it's really great. I'm so happy that, like, it's the role, a slight role reversal this time around. So anyway, how are you doing? How's your day? How's life? How's things?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be back. I'm excited to talk to you again, even though you're not excited to talk to me. It's fine. And it was funny. My podcast producer was like, this was a great episode. I love what you guys talked about. And I was like, yeah, like I felt like we kind of kept going. And I was like, it's just kind of one of those things where you're also, we have hard cutoff times. And so we have to remember that. But that was part of the reason I was like, well, let me just book this one. Also, I feel like there's always more to talk about in this space and it's like different realms. So, but I'm doing great. Just working away. And that's kind of all you can ask for. Low levels of anxiety all the time. It's an inside joke between us.
Yeah. Do you want to just give a quick overview? Do the whole podcast thing. Yeah. Who are you? Like, what's your backstory? Like all that fun stuff.
Hi, I'm Alex. I've been a personal trainer for 10 years. No, like I'll go serious about it. I feel like I was in like group by like at that moment. My name's Alex, obviously. I have been a personal trainer for a decade now, which is wild to say. I still don't believe that I'm 30 a lot of the times. I feel like I'm 22. But I started in the fitness space kind of the same way a lot of people do, which is I had gained the freshman 15, which in my case was the freshman 60. And so put on a lot of weight. And basically did also what a lot of people do and started doing cardio. And I was also a broke college kid. And so I got a Groupon class to get into fitness and didn't really understand what strength training was. They kind of did it. And I was really lucky where the group instructors were actually bodybuilders. So like one was a bikini competitor. One was an actual like bodybuilder. And I was like, what do you guys do? And I was like, you guys don't just like take these classes. And they were like, no, we actually work out at 24 Hour Fitness, all these things. So joined that, got really lucky where the fitness manager actually took me under their wing because they tried to like give me a free personal training session. I was like, I'm actually probably going to learn it on myself. I'm a broke college kid. I'm not going to sign up for personal training. And he took me under his wing and was like, I heard you want to become a personal trainer. I'll help you. Basically got like kind of learned the ropes and then started trying a bunch of random stuff where I was like into bodybuilding, into powerlifting. I was a firefighter. And then eventually kind of went down the bikini competitor rabbit hole, developed a really bad relationship with food, found some real science-based people like Lane Norton and all those people. And I just kind of got deep into evidence-based nutrition and everything. And now I'm here doing the same for other people.
Super cool. And I'd love to, I want to hear about that a little bit more of the going down the competitor route. I think that at first glance, it's easy to for people from the outside looking in to be like, oh, it's super disordered. And you might be like, hey, yeah, that was my experience. You know, it was. Mm-hmm. But like being completely, I follow your content. You are like very far from that like mentality of, you know, everything's about aesthetics. I just care about being like super lean on the stage. Like all the things that come from that, you're very far from that. So clearly mm-hmm. something happened from I went deep into that to I'm now in a completely different / opposite place. So talk me through that transition a little bit.
So it was interesting because I don't think, and I know some people disagree with this because you kind of just mentioned that, but I don't think bodybuilding is inherently disordered. I think there, obviously it's very extreme, but I think that there's a lot of people who have a good head on their shoulders of, hey, I know I'm going to be going to extremes to get on stage, do these things. And then I get off and then I actually have an okay relationship with food where I don't crazy rebound or have something insane happen after. And so it's kind of interesting where it is almost, a lot of people love the absolutes where they're like, everyone who does it is disordered. And I'm like, well, no. I went in with bad expectations. I had already gained and lost weight once, and then I had gained weight back again. So it was my second time gaining close to 60 pounds. And I wanted to lose weight and I didn't really know what I was supposed to do. And the guy I was dating at the time was very much into the bodybuilding space. Like he loved, basically it was a lot of the OG bodybuilders. And so he was really into that. And a lot of his friends were coaches and I didn't know what it meant to compete in bodybuilding at the time. I also didn't have a realistic expectation of how I would look on stage. And so I think that's what happens to a lot of people. And especially back then, that was in 2016, 2017, when that was like the pinnacle of bikini competitors on Instagram. And that was when we all followed all the bikini competitors and we're like, I want to look like that. And they just posted all of their stage or like stage lean photos year round and you had no idea. And so I had an unrealistic expectation of what I should look like. My coach at the time basically starved me. I went down to 900 calories a day. I was doing 7 days a week of cardio, 7 days a week of training. I was also working in retail at the time. And then I was also a full-time student going through like a lot of Fire Academy stuff. And so I was moving like 20 to 30,000 steps a day while doing all of these other things. And eventually got down to 104 pounds. I'm 5'2". And so that was very, very, very tiny. And then after my coach basically just bailed on me, like a lot of coaches unfortunately do, and I got ghosted and didn't really know what to do. And I was scared to eat. This is going to sound probably kind of weird, where I was semi-fortunate, where because I was so scared of gaining weight, because I'd already done it twice, I took things so slow because I just didn't know what I was supposed to do. I was like, I don't know what to do from here because I don't want to gain the weight back, but I'm lost and I know I can't keep doing this forever. And that's where I found like Lane Norton and Paul Revelia, and they like saved me. I like learned what a reverse diet was. And I know we've kind of talked about that, but it was obviously that was like the pinnacle of like reverse dieting 2017. But it was interesting because that helped me. And I think that's why we kind of talked about like reverse dieting in the sense of like psychology, because it helped me since I was so scared of food to be like, okay, I'm going to slowly increase the amount that I'm eating, reduce this. And I understand now we kind of know better of how you can kind of do a more drastic jump if you want. So that helped me from the relationship with food standpoint. I definitely had orthorexia where I just thought I had to eat clean all the time. And honestly, that was 2017 to 2018. And in 2020, I would say is when I actually started to understand that looks weren't everything. I was acting and modeling and doing stunts at the time. And obviously doing all of that, there's a really big hyperfixation on what you look like. And so it took me a while to really start to embrace just whatever I looked like at the time, regardless of how I was training. And I was fortunate where because I was so active, I didn't really have to worry about it. And then 2020 hit, world shut down. I gained a lot of weight because I wasn't as active anymore. And I was in a better headspace where I kind of knew what to do at that point and knew why this happened. And I just started sharing it. Like I basically started taking people through my journey of learning to really love myself and like be okay with myself. So that's kind of how it happened.
You said that there was like a point where you were like, oh, I got to a point where I realized looks weren't everything. Like what clicked, what changed, what happened?
What's funny is like, I can't really say it was one exact thing. I just was really proud of myself for going out on a limb because I had moved to LA with encouragement from that still boyfriend at the same time. And then him and I ended up breaking up, but we were still friends, which was like this is a whole other thing. But basically like I had gone to this new place. I didn't really have friends there. I started making a lot of friends. I started being successful with the acting and the stunts. And I was just really happy for the first time in forever, it felt like forever to me. And I didn't worry about food or training, but that was the kind of interesting thing is I had stopped having to worry about it because I was still coaching classes. I was still so active because of everything I was doing. And I couldn't eat enough to really gain weight anyways at that time. So I just stopped worrying about it. But then because of the excitement around who I was becoming as a person, that helped me when the world shut down and I wasn't able to act anymore. And then the guy that I had been dating at the time and I were still friends, then it kind of got complicated. And then I got my heart broken again. And as I'm going through this heartbreak, I'm like, oh, I actually like myself a lot more than I used to, but I still have a lot to learn. So it wasn't like an overnight, I stopped caring. It was a gradual progression where I started to look at everything else that my body could do that wasn't just lift weights and put them back down.
Yeah. I had a podcast with Natalie and Heidi from Buddy Your Macros, and we were talking about this concept of, because I've tried to nail, it's funny that you were like, hey, what do you have after this? I was like, I have therapy right after this. And like, one of the things I've been talking about a lot is like, I'm just like really proud of like becoming a dad soon. I'm not proud of that, but as I'm becoming a dad soon, I'm like trying to think of, you know, you go through this mindset of like, am I going to be a good dad? Like, am I going to set a good example? Mm-hmm. And I've come to like a very happy conclusion of like, I'm super proud of where I am mentally, like relationship mm-hmm. with my body, relationship with fitness, relationship with whatever. I'm quite happy. And kind of what you were saying, where you were like, hey, I was doing the stunts. I felt like I was having, you know, either success in terms of whatever we defined it as, but you were feeling really good about that mm-hmm. stuff. And I feel like something that's becoming more and more true to me when people are like, oh, I improved my relationship with my body and nutrition, and, you know, I devalued necessarily to some degree how I looked, like it's not as important to me. A lot mm-hmm. of that I feel like comes from getting other shit in your life that you really enjoy. And that's, mm-hmm. it's not like in that moment, I'm sure there were parts of this too, but it's not like in that moment you were really hyper-focused on this. It was something that happened naturally by pursuing mm-hmm. and becoming more than just what you looked like. You were like, hey, I'm doing this. I'm succeeding at this thing I really want to do. I'm really good at it. Maybe I have friends and another circle that's making me happy, hobbies outside of fitness and health that are making me feel good, that give me more to my identity. It sounds like that was happening. And I feel like that's something I'm doing with clients. It's like, I'm wondering if you see this too, but it's like, well, people, you know, you want to help people with body comp, but like mm-hmm. you also want to do it from two fronts. You want to help them from a love their body regardless of body comp and appreciate mm-hmm. other things, but also there's nothing wrong with wanting to build some muscle or lose some fat. And so do you find that part of that is like helping them? I don't know. I don't know where our jurisdiction ends of like helping people have other hobbies and stuff where it's like, hey, like you'll be happier with all of this and you'll enjoy this whole fitness and health stuff if you make your life about more than just that, you know?
I always tell people you'll never hate yourself into a body that you love. And it's true. Cause again, as somebody who like lost a lot of weight, I thought that I hated myself at like 180 pounds. I hated myself at 104 pounds and like, the weight changed nothing. And I 100% agree where when we can stop putting all the emphasis on what our body looks like, it helps a lot. Like I stopped having those conversations. I stopped hanging out with people who were doing bodybuilding and bikini competitions, not because I hated them, but because I realized that it just kept fueling this idea that I only had to train for how I looked or even how many calories I burned on a day-to-day basis. So once I started really just appreciating what my body could do, then it allowed me the separation to then get back into aesthetic training and be okay with it and not like hyper fixate on it. But even with our clients, we tell them all the time, do whatever makes you happy. Like we have clients who rock climb, they do archery, they go skiing, they go snowboarding. Like we heavily, heavily encourage them to do other activities and just move their body in ways that make them feel good. And it's the majority of people that we speak to when they first come to us are shocked. Cause they're like, okay, so I know I like have to stop doing this or I shouldn't run as much as I do or something along those lines. And I'm like, I did half marathons. I did 6 in 1 year. Like I came from running. I went to powerlifting. I went to CrossFit. I went to functional training. I'm like, I did spin, Pilates. I did everything. There is a benefit to it. And that's why I get so angry when people like basically crap on like Orange Theory. Cause I'm like, I used to be an Orange Theory instructor. I heavily agree that there is some things not great about it. And then also there's like a tendency to overdo it. But it can complement stuff and it gives you a great sense of community. And I think that our place as coaches is to help people learn to love movement, whatever that might be, while also understanding that we have a job to educate them. Like, hey, if your goal is to change your body composition, which is totally fine, know that there may be more ideal or optimal ways to do that or things that might expedite it. But if you're not going to stick to it or you're going to be miserable while doing it, do you really think that's worth it?
Yep. And that's something that I've been, my business was, I mean, my group programming is literally called like the hypertrophies. Like I've been like, I'm not saying I'm the hypertrophy guy because there's a million people who talk about hypertrophy, but that was my identity as somebody who trained. That was my identity in my business. And like, then I started.
Now you're a runner.
Yeah. And so I started doing all this running and like, I had not myself an identity crisis because I was like just having a blast. I was loving everything. I was loving the minimalist training to maintain muscle. I was loving the learning more about endurance training. I was loving like some of the benefits in terms of my life that I was having. But I was sort of like, wonder how this comes off. I wonder how, you know, if people are now having to challenge, you know, one of the things that kills me is like the last like year has been like, everything's like zone two training, like zone two is the best, you know, like, and what I fear is like always giving is like people like feeling, oh, this is yet another thing that I have to do. Now I have to do this. I have to lift and I have to do zone two and I have to do mobility and I have to, and I just felt like, I don't know, whatever. I think it's just come from maturing, like rewriting your ethos and like what you're about as you grow as a person. And so that's been me where I'm like, well, maybe, you know, just changing my voice on what I think people should do and how I talk about how people should spend the limited time they have to exercise. And so that's been a little bit of a shift too. And just being like, you're right, where someone's like, hey, come to me and they're doing Orange Theory. Like, I suppose my tone, I don't think I would have ever told somebody to stop doing that, but my tone is probably different than it was 5 years ago where I'm like, hey, mm-hmm. aren't you love Orange Theory? Hell yeah. Let's talk about how it does or doesn't, you know, augment the goals that you have and how we can make the best mm-hmm. schedule for you that involves shit you enjoy doing and results you enjoy getting. Yeah. And so that's definitely been fun. I want to selfishly backtrack and talk about, like, I feel like you're just like, yeah, I just went over there and I was doing like movie stunts and shit. Can we just like go back for a second? Like, can you just like, wait, what? Like, can you even talk me through that?
I was a musical theater major in school and I did theater a lot when I was growing up. And I just always loved acting. I got made fun of it and bullied a lot in middle school and high school. So I stopped doing it. And then in college, that's when I went back to it. Cause I was like, you know, I'm away from all these people now. I can do it. And so musical theater, I'm still a huge musical theater kid. And like, I listen to it regularly. I listen to it when I work out a lot of times. And so, just so people know. I went through a couple of identity crises, I guess, where after that, I then went through the fire academy. So I got certified as a firefighter and then had some like issues there. And then basically like realized it wasn't the area I wanted to be in. And then that's when I started coaching at Orange Theory. And then the guy I was dating at the time was like, you love acting. Why don't you go back to it? And then my dad basically was like, go. And I was like, okay, guys. So just packed up my stuff in a U-Haul one day and just moved down to LA in this tiny studio apartment where just all my stuff, which I wish I took a video. I was so like embarrassed by that. I never wanted anyone to like know where I was living. I wish I had the confidence I do now. And I just joined an acting class that was near there. I was still working at Orange Theory while I like moved down there so I could like obviously make money. And then at the acting studio I went to, they recommended me to somebody to do headshots. And I was like, okay. So I met this girl and she was like, hey, you used to be a firefighter. I have somewhere you'd probably love to go. And I was like, sure. And so it was called XMA Action. And basically he was the Blue Power Ranger, Mike Chad. And he's so disciplined, so awesome. And so all of us would get there at like 4:30 in the morning. And I was like, you guys are my people. So we started doing stunts, everyone there. He's huge on collaboration. And I think that was a great lesson I learned from firefighting in the sense of like brotherhood. But then once we got to acting and stuff, you see a lot of competitive people, a lot of people who just think that everyone's against each other. Like you got to push them down, like all these things. He was the opposite. He was very much like everyone exchanged numbers. I still follow all of the people like from Instagram and stuff that I had met doing that. And like, if we ever had a role that we were like, hey, I'm not a good fit for this, but you probably would be, we would like hit people up right away. So it helped me with like getting roles and getting opportunities there. And then, yeah, it was basically what it was. It was just,
you were the pink Power Ranger is what you're saying. You were a stunt double for the pink Power Ranger is what you're saying.
No, he was the Blue Power Ranger. But I just learned stunts from him. There was a casting for Power Rangers and I did audition for it, but I didn't get it.
Oh,
I was like a little too old looking.
That's cool. So, that's super cool. Yeah, I've never met somebody who was doing that. I guess acting is super crazy hard, man.
It is. And it's interesting because it kind of requires you to separate your emotions, but that was where I learned that kind of ironically, everything I did weirdly kind of like complemented each other very well. But yeah, it was really fun. I loved every bit of it. And the only reason I stopped was because the world shut down. And so when the world shut down in 2020, basically all of the agents and everything, like my agent called me and they were like, hey, we're not really sending people out. Like there's nothing going on. And after about 4 months of that, I was finally like, I'm losing my mind here. And LA had a lot of issues during that time. Like we had a lot of the riots and stuff. And I'm a secluded human, but being in a tiny, basically studio apartment, which at first was fine because literally my days were spent going at 4 o'clock in the morning. I would leave, go to stunts for an hour, hour and a half, then come home, shower, work out, then go to auditions all day long, and then go to acting class at night. So I was never home anyways. It was basically a place for me to sleep. So yeah.
Do you feel like
questions about it?
Yeah, no. Do you feel like your background in acting? Now, I'm not saying you're acting in your content, but I feel like you have like.
I was funny.
Yeah, you're not acting in your content, but I do feel like that's like been a value for you of like, oh, I'm like comfortable in front of a camera and like comfortable like making content. And I feel like, do you feel like that gave you an edge a little bit in content creation?
It did. And what's funny is you just started following me recently. My content's changed vastly over the years.
Do I need to scroll back? Should I scroll back or should I not scroll back?
You can. It's okay. Funny. I think it's funny. Okay. Like I said, I don't get embarrassed by stuff easily. I am who I am. I used to, like, I started doing reels when they first came out. Like within the first day of them being launched on Instagram, I was putting up reels. And I would make just like ridiculous stuff about like pre-workout poops or protein farts, and then also like put good content out there too about like what it's like when you lose weight or signs that you've like lost too much weight or you're not eating enough. So I would incorporate like funny stuff with educational stuff. And it definitely helped me because I'm just comfortable kind of in front of a camera. Like I just get excited. It doesn't bother me. I don't get anxious. So I do think that it helped. I definitely don't think I'm acting. I think that's my favorite thing that I get from people is people are like, when I meet you, you're actually who you are. And I'm like, I struggle with the idea of even turning myself up to like 110% just for the video because I get where there's an appeal to that because it can get more attention. It can kind of elevate things to keep people engaged. I don't want someone to ever meet me and be like, wow, you're really not what I expected. Cause that's happened to me a million times with like creators and influencers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Every businessy sort of coach that I've ever had there, I'm not saying they've had bad advice or anything, but the mm-hmm. advice that they've given has fallen into the bucket of you should try and do this thing because this thing is good for business. And I'm not saying I shun all of that information, but if that mm-hmm. thing in that way with that tone is outside of who I am, it's not like mm-hmm. I'm like, it's not even like, I mean, on some level, it's a righteous sort of like, I don't want to be anyone else. Like that comes from within, yeah. But it's also so fatiguing. Like the mm-hmm. amount of content that you and I both put out, like if I was being someone else, I wouldn't mm-hmm. be able to keep up with that. Like it just wouldn't be, it'd take so much effort. And so there's only so much of like, I feel like this sort of content does well. So I'll take what feels intuitive and natural for me and kind of put it into that bucket, which I'm fine with. But there is a level of like, I've seen that too, by the way. I've met people from social media that I'm like, oh man, it must be like, you're so different than your content. Like that must be so tiring to be a different person all the time on social media, but whatever. So I feel you on that. Let's hard pivot 24 minutes in to okay. the actual, I mean, not that the first 24 minutes aren't wonderfully valuable.
I think people will get stuff from everything we just talked about, totally. But yeah.
I do want to talk a little bit about headspace, a little bit about mindset.
Interesting.
And those are a little nebulous. Favorite. Yeah, they're a little nebulous terms. So I want to talk a little bit about like what sorts of headspaces, what sorts of mindsets do people come to you with? Do you find that you see in people and you're like, ooh, that's something that we want to work through? What are some of those? And we can be, I have a couple jotted down if you want me to kick one off first. But if you're like, hey, like, what are some of these beliefs people come to you with as clients that you're like, yeah, we should tackle that?
Well, so my favorite thing is part of being myself benefits me because it's the ideal client that I work with, which isn't the case for everyone. But so the ironic thing is a lot of the people I tend to attract are me in my earlier journey. So it's a lot of people who come with like all or nothing mindset or really struggling with self-sabotage or self-limiting beliefs, which I bring self-sabotage up because my favorite thing was like, you wrote that in a note and then you were like, is that a thing? And so I'm excited to talk about it so we can talk about it more. But there's a lot of self-limiting beliefs. Like I've always been overweight, so I'll never be able to change, or I just have bad genetics, so what's the point? Or like, I've already failed a bunch, so I'm just bound to fail again. So it's a lot of the stuff that we work through with our clients. Because I think there's still a disconnect between the role of your mindset and psychology and health and fitness. Like I kind of started this conversation when you and I were about to end, which was the fact that like a lot of people will try and argue that being fat's a choice. And I'm like, respectfully, I'm like, shut up. But in like a more professional way, I'm like, it's not. You're completely disregarding the role of different socioeconomic standings and just psychology, honestly, as a whole. Because if it was a choice, I wouldn't have gained and lost weight multiple times while still being active at the same time. So that's kind of the.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you a super hard follow up.
Go for it.
That I'm admitting is hard.
Go for it.
So how do we balance empowering our clients with what they can control while knowing full well in you and I, because you just said it, that there are a lot of what, let's say body composition as one thing, that there are a lot of things that they can't control. And I'm gonna give one little example that is top of mind for me is like, not everybody is going to be able to maintain the same level of leanness with the same level of comfort. And so like everybody can physiologically achieve the same level of leanness. Of course, like physiologically there's nothing stopping you, but you know, my example for me is I'm 199 pounds, let's say 200 pounds. And, I've been 175, I've been 225, but my point is not like, this idea of like, I'll lose the weight and I'll keep it off and is like, okay, I love that. But not everybody's going to be able to maintain the same level of leanness with the same level of comfort. Mm-hmm. And you might be at maintenance calories, which is like energy balance, meaning you're giving your body what it needs. Like it sounds like this utopia of like, I'm giving my body what it needs and thus I will feel great. But you doing that at, you being at calorie maintenance at, I don't know, whatever, X percent body fat, really lean or a little bit less lean, you will feel different even though you're at calorie maintenance. So whatever, I'll ask you the more general question, but how do we balance helping people focus on what they can control and empowering them to say, hey, you can do things, lose fat, gain muscle, you know, build strength, run faster, whatever, while still being like, yeah, but we need to make sure we're not assuming it's going to be the same as what you see for your friends or people on social media and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I also think you brought up really great points already, which is the fact that it's setting expectations. Like, do you have an understanding of what it's going to take for you to maintain where you're at? Because again, I think a lot of people don't know, because it's like, for me, I'm a good example where I'm 5'2". I don't know how much I weigh, to be completely honest. But like I can maintain roughly where I'm at with like 2000 calories. And then I like to walk every single day, roughly 8 to 10K sets, just because I have a dog. And like, that's just part of my day-to-day life. Now, when it's nicer outside, I get up to like 15 to even 20,000 steps without even meaning to. Like, it's not intentional exercise. And then I enjoy training 4 times a week. I think that's a really important thing to incorporate, because I get leaner when it's nicer out because I just move more. But then otherwise, I don't have to think much about it to maintain it. And I don't think people are like comprehending that a lot of times. It's like, what do you need to be able to do without having to put in that much intentional thought, I guess, to be able to maintain where you're at? So setting expectations is huge. So getting people to understand that. And part of that's the journey, because we just don't know. We don't know what you're going to be like when you do lose weight or whatever it might be. But I think as coaches, it's our responsibility, and to each their own with this one, I guess, but I've gone through like different mindset certifications to like try to broaden my knowledge on this, because obviously we can't replace a therapist. I always encourage people going to therapy and stuff, but we can help people work through some of the self-limiting beliefs that they have and help promote self-efficacy. I think a lot of coaches love being right and love being like, I know the best thing for you. Just follow this. Here's the macros. Here's the workouts. Great. Let's go. 8 to 10K steps. You're good. But if we just give people, it's like when people give meal plans, are you really helping this person by giving them a meal plan? Most great dietitians will not give you a meal plan. They're the ones who are legally allowed to do it. But then a great coach or a great dietitian who's like, hey, here's a framework of how to build a meal. They're going to teach you, what is it? Teach someone how to fish or give them a fish. Then they eat for a day, teach someone how to fish. They eat for life. It's the same thing. And that's one of the biggest things we promote with our coaching is like, our goal isn't to feel like you have to be with us forever. It's to educate you and empower you so you can continue to make choices on your own. So that's where helping people develop more self-efficacy and education, I think, is how we do that. And then also promoting more positive mindsets, because I think a lot of people go in with negativity. And then again, kind of setting realistic expectations. And I think that's where having a coach can be really helpful, because it's really hard to know where your body's kind of like, I'll say this word, I don't really mean it like this, but like kind of set point is. Because it's going to vary depending on like where you live and so many other factors too. And just what you like to do. But I think like having someone to be like, hey, so we're kind of learning that if we're not really having to think too much about like getting up and going for walks all the time, and you're not having to do a lot of conscious effort to do this, and this is where you are, this may be just be like your set point, and that's cool. Now, if you want to be leaner, you now know you probably have to do a little bit more and think about it. Does that answer your question?
Totally. A lot of people start with a body that they have in their mind of what they want. Yeah. And then they will reverse engineer the actions they need to get that body. And what they're doing is they're shoving their lifestyle into the body. And they're saying, okay, like whatever the lifestyle I have to maintain that body, I'm gonna try and do that. And on the opposite side, you could say, here's the life I want to live. What if I live that way, what does my physique look like? How do I feel? And I think that both of them are extreme examples of like, I'm just going to focus on my lifestyle. Whatever happens to my body happens to my body. And the opposite is true. It's not to say that either of those extremes is the right way to think, but I think a lot of people forget that there is somewhat of a trade-offs that go on here of like lifestyle and body composition. And I think a lot of people need to think really hard about what sort of life they really like to live and what they're non-negotiables are. I mean, you can use that word, but I think,
wait, what did you say?
Non-negotiables, but like just things that you like to do. And like, and it doesn't even need to be specific things. It can be like, I want to be able to not have to say no to a night out and not have to think twice about saying no, or not have to make a consideration for where we're going. And, you know, if I want to live that way, is it realistic for me to have this level of leanness? And I think that set point is just an interaction between your genetics and your lifestyle. So set point's a real thing genetically, but it goes, is layered, intertwined with your lifestyle. And so I think people just, I don't know, you said help people set expectations, help people know what things are going to cost. Super duper helpful. And along the way, just kind of recalibrating, like, is this worth it for you? Do you, these changes that it's going to cost, like, do we want to do those? Like, and I feel like I do a lot of that. I feel like I do a lot of like letting people know what it's going to cost, you know, like, and be like, hey, like, do you want to do this?
People don't want to hear it a lot of times. It's interesting because I've become much more in tune with when I feel inherently, like, I'm going to say, quote, triggered, because I used to be my client. And there's things that my PR brain sometimes like turns on where I'm like, am I going to say this the wrong way? And people are going to get upset. And it's not because I'm trying to basically like not be honest. It's because like, I want to make sure I say things the right way and don't get misunderstood. And then I notice when I do that sometimes, and I do filter out of a place of my own insecurity or my own anxiety around that thing, because like, if I had heard that earlier in my journey, it probably would have upset me. And I've learned those are the things that people need to hear. And so I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think that, we mentioned self-sabotage at one point, and I wrote in the little notes saying, is this a thing?
Is this a thing? Yeah.
I was
so curious why you wrote that.
Yeah. And I'll set the scene, but I want to hear from you. It's just that I think that self-sabotage can be a real thing. But I think it comes in shapes and sizes and can sometimes be a mask for something else. I'm fascinated by the psychology behind it, like where that sort of comes from. I'm not going to ask for like research studies on people who go through, I forgot the correct pronunciation of like cherophobia. but it's like just a fear of good things happening. But
I'd say that goes like real, that goes real deep.
Yeah. Real deep.
Yeah.
Webster's. But I'd be curious where you see that self-sabotage come up and how it manifests itself in a conversation you might have with somebody.
Well, so it's interesting. I found it so interesting that was the direction you went to for self-sabotage, though, because there are so many forms of it. Because you were saying like a belief that you're, what did you say? A belief that good things can't
fear
happen
of,
for you.
Just like a fear of good things, that good things will happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not the only way self-sabotage comes up. Which is what's so interesting, because like we see it a lot with procrastination, people putting off going to the gym or getting homework done or getting their work done. So it's like you're putting off important. I used to be a huge procrastinator because I would be worried about the end result. And so I would just put it off because I was scared of it, which is also a form of avoidance. So you like almost avoid challenging or opportunities of growth because of your fear of failure or rejection. I see it a lot with like negative self-talk. So like basically like the kind of the self-critical or self-defeating thoughts, like that is also a form of self-sabotage because it inherently diminishes your confidence and your motivation. Similar to what you kind of already said, actually, is like some of it comes from a belief that you're not good enough, which I think it, weirdly enough, actually is one of the bigger things I see in the health and fitness space, is less so discipline and motivation, but more a lack of belief in people's selves. There's also a fear of success. There's low self-esteem, or just maladaptive coping mechanisms. So there's a lot that kind of goes into it. That's what I see with my clients.
Yep.
And just people in general.
Yeah. The low self-esteem one is definitely
one of the big ones.
Low self-efficacy, low self-esteem. Let's talk about self-efficacy and let's talk about it. You know, self-efficacy roughly, loosely, the somebody's belief that they can be successful doing something, that if they mm-hmm. begin a task, it's not blind confidence, but just it's, let's say, more general baseline belief in your ability to do something. And I 100%. Definitely think that people on average, at least the people who arrive at your doorstep, my doorstep, who are looking to make a change, get healthier. And then again, at least in this realm of health and fitness, come with like mm-hmm. a low baseline self-efficacy. Where does that come from, do you think?
I think it comes from the dieting industry. It's funny. Sometimes people get upset that I like just attack them like crazy, but I'm like, you know, I don't want to always place the blame because as consumers, we have a job to learn and grow and make better choices as we continue to get more information. But I see it so much in the dieting industry where they're designed to fail. Like diets inherently are designed to not be sustainable, which then leaves people with a sense of belief that they will just inherently fail. And so that's where I think some of the self-efficacy kind of comes in because lack of self-efficacy, because they're like, well, I'm doing these things. They'll have the short-term discipline to do the diet, do the trend or whatever it might be. But then inherently they fall off because they didn't know better. And that's not an excuse. I love, and like, maybe you can argue with me on that, but like, I think it's always funny when people are like, you're giving people excuses. You're giving people the easy way out. And I was like, no. If they do the diet again, like it's the whole fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on, no, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. And so it's the exact same thing. If you're doing a diet, you lose a bunch of weight and then you gain it all back and then you go back on the diet because you're like, well, it worked the first time. Did it really? Like, are you using critical thinking when you're telling yourself that? Probably not. And I'm not being a dick when I say that. I wish someone had told me that because I was like, oh, I didn't even consider the fact that like cutting out sugar or carbs wasn't going to be sustainable for me for more than like a year. And so I shouldn't have been doing it for more than like 10 days anyways. So I am placing a big blame on the dieting industry as like a whole and how that has validated the belief of just basically confirmed failure for your future. And so that's where people like start to now in their brains tell themselves, yeah, I'm going to fail. I always fail.
Most people have come to you or me and it's not their first rodeo. And so like you have low self-efficacy with dieting because you've dieted before and it didn't work. And so, you know, obviously you and I would dive into kind of why that is and go with a mantra of like, how's it going to be different this time if it's not different this time? And the problem is that one of the problems is that we are pitching them what feels like the slow game. Right? It feels like the long game. And so they're thinking, well, I failed with a bunch of this stuff, but within those failures were like micro successes where I lost a lot of weight really quickly. Mm-hmm. here and now I'm starting this other thing that, and I don't have a large belief that it's going to work because this is new for me. And, mm-hmm. and I'm not, let's say, losing weight as quickly, seeing changes as quickly, feeling different as quickly, you know? And so there's a level of buy-in. You know, I've been known to say that the shortcut or the long way is actually the shortcut. And so like that, yeah, like 100%. Most people will do a bunch of shortcuts for 20 years and instead of mm-hmm. maybe spending 3 to 5 of those on the long way, which is actually turns yeah. out to be the shortcut. And so that is definitely, and listen, if you're like, hey, I have low self-efficacy or something, like you're like, I get a bunch of Fs in school. And that, like, how, and someone's like, how's your self-efficacy with school? You're like, not great. You know, like, so like I understand where that comes from. I feel like I'm interested in how this goes with your sort of coaching, but that is so top of mind for me in the beginning. I know buy-in mm-hmm. is such a catchy, like kind of bullshit cliche word, but it's not about buy-in to me. It's about mm-hmm. buy-in to that, to yourself, that you can do whatever we're talking about doing when we're onboarding yeah. a client. That I really think of that first month as like just putting the train onto the tracks and like having somebody feel like they are moving in the direction. They're with a person, me or you, that like they feel confident with. They're doing something that maybe isn't, it hasn't panned out. They're not at point B yet, but they mm-hmm. feel confident they're moving in the direction. They feel confident they can do what they've set out to do right now. Maybe it's focus on eating more protein or eating more fiber, more fruits and vegetables, or drinking less or whatever it is. But just building mm-hmm. that self-efficacy, that confidence in the early stages is the actual, like we talk about getting clients like early wins. And even in the research, we see yeah. that people who lose weight very quickly, like there's a lot of people that talk about that. I've been known to say it too. Where it's like people lose weight. Like actually one of the predictors of long-term weight loss success is the people losing weight early on. And I understand the psychology there, but when I'm dealing with someone one-on-one, I think that I know that where I'm like, okay, there's a balance of getting someone to see some sort of progress so that they can like mentally check in a little bit more. But there's that self-efficacy that I'm trying to build outside of the scale that I'm not saying it's an uphill battle, but it's just harder because you're trying to not focus so much on the outcome, which is what they've done a million times previously.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that wins is huge because we are dopamine creatures. We like it, which is why dieting is, again, so interesting to us because we're like just so many dopamine hits of the scale going down. So how can we then shift from just focusing on the scale to other things like winning? One of the things that we love for clients to do is basically if you complete X amount of things, I'm going to give arbitrary numbers here so it can depend on the person. But like one thing we love to do is, okay, cool. You finish your first 5 workouts and you do them in a row. We give you a $5 Starbucks gift card. And we're like, cool, you did it. And we give you like a surprise dopamine hit. No, no, no. People do work with us. Now they're going to know they get it. But it's like, then we send it to them. Or it's like, if you do, like, and we encourage them to do it with themselves too. So down the line, we're like, hey, so maybe you do 5 workouts in a row, again, just random numbers here. And then you treat yourself to that sports bra you really wanted, or you have like a nice like bath day at home and you like give yourself like that time to relax. You find a way to give yourself almost a, I don't want to say like almost kind of retraining in your brain how like prizes a lot of times used to be like food. Like it used to be like, oh, we're going to get pizza. Or we're going to get donuts. And like, this is my prize. It's the reward system, but it's now focused on aligning with your goals. So it makes it more exciting to you, but then also just stacking wins. Like we do that daily. We tell our clients, we're like, okay, you need something that's going to do your mind. We need something that's going to be nutrition, and we need some sort of movement. And we need those 3 things first thing in the day. And it could be as simple as like, hey, I got out of bed and I didn't hit snooze. Or it could be, I got out of bed and I always do that, no problem. And then I go for like a little walk. Like it has to be something that aligns with your goals, but it doesn't have to be something huge. And it actually probably shouldn't be. And then by doing that, you're already stacking your wins for the day where it feels like you're going to be a lot more successful already. When we start the day on like the shitty note of, hey, I already hit snooze. Okay. Now I think I forgot my water. I just grabbed my coffee and like, okay. Now I don't remember getting breakfast or like, am I even thinking about it? Or I'm like rushing out the door and I feel like frazzled. And so by starting the day with even just some intentional, like I know I did X, Y, and Z is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that too. I'm not like, I don't want to be like hashtag entrepreneur morning routine, 48 step morning routine, but I'm all for something that has almost like a symbolic effect. Like, you know, like I take my creatine, everything for every day, first thing in the morning with a 0.5 liter of water or whatever it is. And like, it doesn't actually make a big difference, but like it might be part of a structure of little things that does lead to more positive things later in the day. Yeah.
Someone not hitting snooze and getting out of bed, that alone can be such a big win for so many people. And they don't realize the impact of hitting the snooze button on them. Like, I don't want to get on a, I don't want to go down like a rabbit hole of that. But because I know some people get real upset when I'm like, well, if you hit snooze, like you really are setting your day up kind of on a really low note because you're already showing yourself that, like, okay, I'm not going to follow through the things that I'm doing, or I'm already kind of like putting life on pause. So it's like, and I know people who will literally set their alarm early so they can hit snooze. And I'm like, why don't you just set your alarm for when you're supposed to wake up? And they're like, but it feels so nice to go back. And I'm like, no, it doesn't, because then you go back to sleep and then you feel like crap when you wake up. And it's like, it's the really hard conversation of like, if that's really what you want to do and that really makes you happy, fine. But if you're questioning your ability to get things done, start the day by already proving to yourself that you can do the small thing of just hitting the button and getting out of bed.
Yes, snooze psychology is fascinating because it makes there
It
is
is.
no actual logical rationale for
No.
hitting snooze. You are I'm not saying I've never hit snooze before. I'm not even saying I didn't hit snooze
Yeah.
this morning, but like I'm just saying, looking at it objectively, there's no reason. I know it when I'm sitting there. Like the thing that gets me out of bed normally when I'm like thinking about hitting snooze is like I tell myself, I'm like, Jordan, think of like one rational reason you'd hit snooze right now. And usually what it is that like. And your example of like, I preemptively set myself up to snooze. Or I like set my alarm for 5:30 because I know I got to get up at 5:50. That's absolutely irrational. But for me, like I can supposedly get up within a little bit of, I have a little window of time. If
Yeah.
I say to myself, I'm going to try and go back to sleep. Then I'm like, okay, that's a fine. Like I'm electing to try and get more sleep. But within like 1 minute of doing that, I'm like, no, you're not. I'm like, you're just not, you're getting up now. So the snooze function is just, it's just funny. I just wonder who, like, I don't
Came up
know.
with it.
Yeah, well, I can't come up with that. I mean, I can see the value in other contexts, but like the snooze button just being like, you could have just slept longer, you know? Like, yeah.
I'm definitely a huge advocate on getting sleep. And like, I will tell people, I would rather have you get sleep than go to the gym. Like, I say that all the time. And I'm like, I think that sleep is so undervalued. And because people will literally be like, oh, I got 4 hours of sleep and I'm grinding and I still went to the gym and like wear it as like a badge of honor. And I'm like, it's way cooler to be like, I got 7 hours of sleep and then maybe I like did random micro workouts or little workout snacks throughout the day than it is to be like, I crushed this really hard workout and I got no benefit because I, not no benefit, minimal benefit from training because odds are your training session wasn't as intense as it could be. You're probably not going to recover as well as you thought. And then you're now just like jacked up on caffeine or something to get you through it. And so you're just like wrecking your system. But also I want to make it clear too, like, I'm not saying like you're a bad person if you hit snooze.
I'm
I'm not saying you're a
kidding.
bad
I'm busting your
person.
chops.
I tend to, so I think for me, because I don't have an alarm clock. I just get up. And like it's interesting because I always have to remind myself that like I am unique in that sense where I can wake up at 4 o'clock without an alarm. And it's just how I am. I've always been that way. And I've always been an
Hashtag
early
grind.
person. Except
Hashtag
not. I literally go
grind.
to
No,
bed at
I'm just
like
kidding.
eight.
I
I
know. I'm
got
kidding.
8 hours of sleep last night.
Yeah.
I got 8 hours of sleep last night and I went to bed at like 8 o'clock. Like I fell asleep at like 8. So I went to bed at like 7:30. But it's like I make that conscious choice because like I know my body will wake up. Me sleeping in is like 6 or like 6:30. Like that's my body sleeping in, not because grind mentality or anything. I tell people this all the time. I wish I could sleep in because there's nights where I go out with friends or I do something like that. Like it's not as frequent, but when I do it, I hate life the next day because I get like 5 hours of sleep, even though I'm like laying in bed wishing I could have slept longer. So I wish I could, I can't. So I have to empathize. My twin brother is the opposite. He can sleep until like 10 a.m. and have no problem with it. And so it's just been interesting to kind of like try to practice empathy around that. But then I also want people to be excited about who they are as a person and be really proud of the choices they make. And I ask them, are you proud of hitting the snooze button? If not, and like that's not me attacking you, it's me asking you a legitimate question. If you're not, then don't do it. Like stop doing stuff that makes you feel like shit about yourself. Tell people about, sorry, I realized I said shit twice and I was like, I don't know if I'm
No, you
supposed
can curse all you want. It just
to
does get me
say.
the occasional not nice
I get
review on
really
iTunes.
passionate.
I have like,
I'm
I love
sorry.
everyone who's, but PS, like shameless plug, like fire up a 5-star review if you're listening. It's great. Really super helpful. But it's just funny that like I never read like reviews and stuff like that. I just can't like, but I wasn't even sure how to leave a review. So I was like, how does one even leave a review on iTunes? And so of course I found my reviews and it's just like, first of all, everyone listening, I love you. Pod fam, I love you guys. And everyone who's left a review, I love you. But it's just like a great review, good information. Jordan's great. And it's just felt me. So, and then the last is like one star. It's too many F-bombs. They're like, I know it's explicit, but like, I'm like, all right, like whatever, chill out. On that sleep note, I just, the thing that comes to me, like something that I've said before is just people who, if you're in a deload week, this always happens with people. Like if you're, I'll just say this out loud into the ether here. If you're in a deload week, P.S. maybe potentially at all times, but specifically in this context, a lot of people like train first thing in the morning and don't really get enough sleep. Like I usually am like, take the entire deload week and get an extra hour of sleep every day and don't train. Yeah. I take that every day of the week in a deload week. If you're someone who trains at 5 o'clock in the morning, but you could sleep till 6:30 in your deload week, do that. That's going to be better for your recovery, muscle growth than another, you know, week of 6.5 hours. I'd rather you get a week of 8 hours. For sure.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. I want to talk about one more topic. I want to be respectful of your time. I got like 12 to 15 minutes here, so we shall see. I just feel like this is a topic I'm trying to find space to talk about more. And it's this, not dealing with, but this idea of working with clients or want to work on self-improvement, but feel like there's people in their life, spouses is like the clear one here, of not necessarily the most supportive. And so how do you navigate those discussions of somebody comes to you and is like, hey, like, you know, my husband's making this really tough. You know, he eats like shit, or you know, gives me shit if I don't want to drink with him. Or how do we have those discussions?
Obviously we need to know our place of like what we're allowed. I don't want to say allowed, but like what's within our scope, I guess, to say, cause we can only do so much. I do think having conversations around boundaries is huge. We do have a lot of conversations with our clients around communication and boundaries and like how to set them, why they're important. Because I think a lot of people don't know how to do that. And I think a lot of people are also afraid of communication, like a direct communication, because they don't want to like cause conflict. But sometimes like avoiding conflict is going to lead to resentment. And so it's better to like have the conversation. So we do discuss that with clients, and we try our best to kind of recognize, like, let's come from the place where these are the things that I would love to happen, and here's why, and like stick to facts as much as you can. It's hard to keep emotion out of it when this is something that's important to you, but how can we create a conversation around the things that are important to us? Like if you're saying that someone's not being supportive, respectfully, your partner should be. I know that that's a controversial opinion. I think if you are doing things to better your health and ultimately show up as a better partner, your partner should be supportive of it. If they're not, I'm kind of curious why, but that's a whole other conversation. But it's like conveying to them, this is something that really matters to me because I want to feel better on a day-to-day basis. I feel better when I do this. I have more energy. Like here's a really ridiculous example. I don't let my dog sleep in the bed. And that's something that like a lot of people are shocked by, because I love my dog more than almost anything in the world. Because she wakes me up. She wakes me up in the middle of the night. She gets excited, or she moves around and I just wake up really easily. So I don't let her sleep in the bed. And people used to make me feel bad about that. They're like, oh my gosh, how do you not do that? And I know that sounded just really dramatic when I said it just that way, but people will literally talk to me like it's the worst thing I've ever done to my dog in my life. The reason I don't do it is because if she sleeps in the bed and I get bad sleep, I'm not going to want to play with her as much. I'm not going to show up for her on the same capacity that I usually would. So I create a boundary. She can stay in the bed until I'm about to go to sleep. And then I usually pick her up and I put her on the couch and I'm like, I love you so much. I just know that. Bye. Then I leave. First thing in the morning, I come out and I play with her and I love her and all these things because I got sleep. And so I think that part of the thing with partners, I know obviously I give a dog, I don't have a child. Sorry guys. And I'm very empathetic and understanding the fact that not everyone has the same hours in a day and things like that. Like I want to make that clear. But like creating those boundaries and understanding that like, if you don't, you are probably going to show up worse on a day-to-day basis. And so by like having those difficult conversations, like that can help you. Similarly, finding other supportive people. Like if people in your life aren't supportive, I had a lot of people in my life who loved drinking. They loved going out every single night. They smoked weed. I didn't, it's not appealing to me. And then they would just like eat fast food all the time. And I was like, hey guys, do you want to like start going on hikes more? Or do you want to like go outside? Or do you guys want to like not go get food? And like, can we maybe like just grab a coffee or something instead? Like I would try and compromise. Some people would, some people wouldn't. And so I just started spending more time with people who actually wanted to do the things that made sense. And I'm not saying don't be friends with those people, or obviously don't leave your partner or something, but like go and try and find those people. If you don't have them around you, so, like social media and all these things are huge now because like you can fake, like have these relationships in person where like I'll talk to people on Zoom all the time and like go walk outside or like on FaceTime, just like walking on the treadmill while doing this. But it's, I think that people are, this, we won't go too deep into this, obviously, because I know we're like cutting time, but people are scared to let go of their old identity and like who they used to be or old relationships. But you have to be okay with like recognizing there's parts of you that are no longer going to exist when you grow, when you develop. And people are scared that that means that then they're going to lose their relationship. They're going to lose their friends. They're going to lose these things. I say this with so much love. You don't have to lose them completely. If they choose to leave your life because of your choices, then that's on them, not on you. It's a reflection of them and potentially their own insecurities. But it's like, you can also be a great example for people. Like I know when I first started my business, I had a lot of friends who they don't own their own businesses, but they would see me like constantly trying to like, I would post every single day on social media. I would like be reaching out to my clients. I would be talking about the things that I wanted to accomplish in my business. And they started to do things in their own life to do that. Like they started asking for more responsibilities at work. They started trying to like work out a little bit more. They started to do these things. And I never once told them to. I just led by example and I did the things that made me feel happy, made me feel proud. They saw how happy I was as like a human being because of doing these things. And they realized that they wanted to do the same thing.
That was a fantastic monologue. No, you absolutely crushed that. I want to go back to the dog sleeping in the bed example, mostly because I just want to crucify you for it. No, I'm just kidding. But mostly because I actually think it's an amazing example.
You don't either.
I don't either. Right. But and it's so funny, like dog stuff is like just underneath training for me as like things that I get most passionate about. And so I don't want to go into this topic as a specific topic, but the analogy actually is, brings to mind the word that I think of a lot when I think of the spouse not being supportive, and the word is resentment. And so like mm-hmm. If you let your dog sleep in your, I don't want this
you're
to be
a general example.
Yeah. I don't want people to be like, you don't, whatever. But let's say your dog sleeps in your bed. Actually, I'll tell you right here. To give you an example. So it doesn't have to be me or you. I have a client right now, just got a puppy and her sleep sucks. Every single night, puppy's in the bed. Yeah. It has to go. I mean, whatever. It has to go out to pee, and that's fine. That's normal. But like, never settles, all over the bed, jumping all over the place. She's not sleeping. She's like not sleeping well. And my best friend is a dog trainer, and I'm like, hey, you got to get with him. You got to work on. I mean, you don't got to do anything, by the way. I'm just saying, like, my point is, like, this is a problem you don't need to have. Like, you can have a very happy dog who's crate trained, or you can have a happy dog who understands. I'm not going to sleep in the bed. And it's you are going to begin to resent the dog for doing this, and mm-hmm. it's going to mess with your relationship. And the same thing happens with spouses. If you let that stay inside and you don't have these hard, honest conversations about what you need from your spouse or people around you, friends, mm-hmm. family, it builds resentment, and resentment and regret are two words that give me, I mean, they really get me, like, I get really, I don't know, I'm getting it right now where I'm like starting to sweat a little bit. They scare the shit out of me. I hate that feeling of resentment. I hate that feeling of having feelings that build up. Mm-hmm. I hate that feeling of like, you know, not having had that hard conversation and instead like having this like low level chronic anxiety about it instead of just like tackling it head on. And so with the dog situation, it's like, yeah. And frankly, there's also the spouse who snores in bed. It's the same thing, by the way. Like,
oh my gosh.
I bet people are like, man, my spouse has been snoring for the last 20 years. I'm like, get the fuck up and go to sleep somewhere else, or have them go sleep somewhere else. Get them a CPAP.
Or wear
you know?
Earplugs or something.
Yeah, like there's no reason for you to be dealing with this.
About it. Yeah.
And having this low level resentment that just builds and builds.
Yeah.
So yeah, the dog thing is great because like you would say, okay, like great, like I'm going to have poor sleep, but then
that day, that later that day, when you feel like shit, you're going to resent your dogs for it. It's going to affect your relationship with them. Same thing goes for the spouse in the situation. So I thought you articulated that super well. Thank you.
Well, it does. And what's interesting is what I think a lot of people don't realize around resentment, because I used to get a lot of anxiety when I would think about it too, but it was because I didn't realize that it was my fault. I wanted to blame them, and I wanted to put everything on them for like not telling them how I felt or not. Like, it's kind of like, and we won't get too far into this, I promise, but it's like when people are like, oh, if he wanted to, he would, or like, he should be doing these things. And I get really frustrated because I'm like, that's not fair. Did you ever say anything? And like, I've shared examples of that with like friends where they'll be like, well, I expect them to do this for Valentine's Day. And I'm like, have you guys ever done that? Or have you told them that? And then they're like, well, no, but they should just know. And I'm like, why should they just know? Do you just know everything? No. Like, but seriously, and like a lot of people don't want to recognize that them resenting somebody else is a reflection of your lack of accountability and your lack of communication. Does that mean that you're in the wrong all the time? No. Like, sometimes we don't know how to communicate. We're still learning. Like, we're putting in effort. But if you're not putting in any effort and you're not trying to communicate, you're not trying to learn how to communicate better, you're not working through your shit, you need to take accountability for that responsibility.
Yeah.
Coming from somebody who used to be like that.
It comes from a perspective of looking at what you can do first instead of like projecting outward. I think if you're like, hey, this is my spouse isn't doing this, it's like, okay, well, what have you done to kind of help facilitate change? Yeah. You know? So I think that's a good mindset to adopt.
That's my favorite question. When people are like, my girlfriend doesn't want to work out. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? Or like, my wife doesn't want to work out. And I'm like, well, what are you doing to make it easier for them to work out? Like, are you helping around the house? Are you helping cook meals? Are you maybe watching the kids? And so that way they do have time to work out. Like, are you doing anything to make their life easier? Since you're the one complaining about them not working out. If they were like, oh, I never work out, that's a different conversation. But if you're like, how do I get them to do that? Help them.
Yeah.
Make it easier.
See, this is what you should ask when I said, what's the bugbear situation? Look at you all passionate about this.
I have a couple Roman empires, and relationships is definitely one of them, especially when it comes to this.
All right. Well, let's put a pin in that. And I'd love to bring that, because this is, again, a topic I think just like goes under discussed, where it's like it becomes one of the first obstacles of like, well, I'm almost like at a point where I can't go much further without a unit, without a family unit, without a team, and again, you mentioned on the side of like, you can go find those people elsewhere. Like, you can go, that you can create that circle. You can join a club. You can go to Orange Theory. I mean, let's be real. This is why people love group fitness.
Your spouse is at home all the time, though.
Yeah. True. But I just think that you're right.
They're who you spend the most time with.
Yes, exactly. So it's not something you can just fill that gap completely elsewhere. I think it takes addressing for sure. All right, we put a pin in that because I do want to bring it back. Tell people where I can find you. Do the podcast outro thing. Here's my Instagram. I got this great podcast. This other guy was just on it who's speaking right now. And so, go.
This guy was on it. It was fine. It didn't really do that well, but it's okay.
It's got no analytics. Not a single person listened to it.
I'm not going to share the analytics from that episode. Okay. Anyway, just kidding. So you guys can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and I think even YouTube at The Alex Allen. I actually think it's on Threads and Twitter too, but it's The Alex Allen. And you can, my podcast is called Born to Thrive. Our coaching's Lift with Alex Coaching. And we just... it sounds like Jordan and I have very similar beliefs on things, which I appreciate. And so that's where you can find me. I post a lot of content around all or nothing mindset. I talk a lot about periods and basically just trying to be the best version of yourself.
Cool. Yeah. I second that. If you do not follow Alex, give her a follow. Great stuff. Good post today on airbrushing, like old dudes.
How did
wrinkles.
You see that? You were literally supposed, I posted that like 3 minutes before we were supposed to be on the podcast.
You know what though? Like at this point though, like your feed, first of all, that is, I can't get around that, but your feed doesn't show anything in chronological order anyway. So that's like, I think they took away when you post.
I thought there was
something.
Like an option to do that. And then
like, no, not every post tells me like if I'm on my feed,
it has to be on your main page, not the Reels page. If you're on Reels, you like can't see when it is. But if you're on like your main page, it'll say at the bottom the time that they posted it.
No, not for me.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
I'm looking. Maybe I haven't updated.
No, I don't know if it's you thing. I'm on my feed right now as we're talking and I'm like scrolling through people's stuff and it just says, yeah, I don't see when that was posted. And I whatever, it doesn't matter, but just like a weird thing. I don't know.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, the airbrushing post. It's
really good.
It's alarming how women always get edited, but then men never do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We got to put the on Zoom. They have the touch up my appearance thing. They have that slider scroll.
You have no.
It's jacked up all the way. Of course. Total. Well, that's because of this. That's because of the feature like scrolled up all the way.
All the way on.
Yeah. All right, dude. All right. I'll let you know. I'll we're going to end the episode there. We don't have a fancy outro. I just say goodbye.
You don't? Nah. Don't be a dick, especially to yourself, y'all.
Okay. You all steal it. Thanks all right, so bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram, @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.